Are you gay?
Geeky?
Just enjoy hearing your good Judy's dish about the latest in pop culture?
Well, then you're in luck.
The boys of Flame On are here for you.
In every episode, we discuss the topics that entrance us.
Whether it's comics, TV,
movies,
drag queens,
or video games,
we've got you covered.
So, if you're ready for your gay and geeky slice of pop culture life,
then sit back and get ready to
Flame On!
Hey, have you heard about the all-new Windows 11? It's available now, and it's a whole new, simplified way to experience your PC. Windows 11 was designed to help you stay in your flow. There are new and improved features to keep organized, with easy access to news, weather, and events. Instantly connect with anyone, anywhere, or access the latest apps and games right on your PC. Windows 11 brings you closer to what you love. Start your journey at windows.com/brings you closer.
Brace yourselves for unknowable horror, because the Call of Cthulhu Mystery Program has returned. Yes, Nerdy Show's beloved RPG audio drama of black comedy and Lovecraftian horror is back with an all-new series, a chilling tale called The Terrible Secret of Lot X. Head to CthulhuMystery.com or find the Call of Cthulhu Mystery Program wherever you procure fine podcasts. Succumb to the maddening call of Cthulhu.
The following episode of Flame On is presented by the Nerdy Show Network.
Geeky programming for all nerds across the multiverse. All Nerdy Show programming is made possible by a comic shop.
Orlando's number one comic shop and nerd destination.
And with the generous support of listeners like you.
To learn how you can support this and other fine geeky programming, visit nerdyshow.com. What's going on, everybody? Pat DeBear here, and we are back again with another microsode. I am joined by BJ.
Hi.
Eric.
Hello.
And Brian.
Hola.
And we are here with a very, it's kind of an interesting, kind of unique, we've done a little bit of this conversation before, a little bit, but it is a fun topic to delve into the different facets of and the different iterations and repercussions of the multiverse of reboots and refreshes and new takes on old classics. I mean, when you have things like The Wonder Years being rebooted from a different vantage point, a different perspective, it shows you that these properties have a lasting appeal that crosses generations, and a generation that grew up with a property can in turn reboot it and reshape it once they come of age and are able to start being the ones creating the content that is going out to the public. We've seen reboots of things like Mad About You, which I don't think any of us have seen. Did anybody watch the original Mad About You?
I didn't.
I saw episodes of it. I didn't watch it religiously.
Yeah, same. And it wasn't one of those that, like, I was watching it on, I don't think it wasn't like when I watched it on like NBC when it was on, or if that was the network it was on. I was a big USA morning watcher, and it was at prime time in the daytime block that they would run in the morning. So it'd be like Wings and Ned and Stacy. And wow. Mad About You, like, these were all shows that were not a part of like my culture growing up in actual like first run, but they were a lot of things that we got to watch growing up as syndication on other networks. So a lot of these things get rebooted and don't always do well, but there are ones that really do showcase the right way to do a reboot or the right way to refresh a property. So that isn't the full scope of what we're going to be talking about today. BJ had thrown this out there for us to talk about what properties out there do we think deserve a reboot or have been rebooted and failed so horribly that we need to pretend that never happened and let's do it again. But I figure in order to kind of illustrate where our minds are from this perspective for this topic, I wanted to do a quick lightning round of properties that were rebooted that worked well. So that way our listeners can dive a little bit into our brains. I know it's a little scary in there most of the time, but let's talk about the things that worked as a reboot. And then we'll dive into the topics we brought that we think would make for a great reboot opportunity in 2021 and beyond. Brian, I'm going to throw it over to you first. So give us your reboot that worked.
It's going to be a tie between two properties that are out and one that is about to come out. And if anyone has ever heard me talk about anything science fiction for any length of time, you probably know where this is going. So,
is there a giant worm involved?
There may or may not be a giant worm involved. Probably the top of them, if I had to give a little bit of an advantage, Blade Runner 2049. I'm absolutely in love with Denis Villeneuve as a director. And his take on an extension of Blade Runner is sort of a reboot of the story, but it's a sequel, but also sort of, you know, obviously rebooting it for the younger and more modern, whatever, generation people. Excellent. It's as slow as I want it to be. I have yet to submit anyone through the Blade Runner test with it. Eric, I don't think you saw 2049, did you?
No, I didn't. No.
Is it because you didn't make it through the first few minutes? No.
I mean, I've never seen the first one, so how could I see the sequel?
Yeah, I was going to say same here.
Oh, gosh.
Girl, I didn't see the first one. I didn't make it through the first one. And I have a ticket stub that's probably in the trash because, you know, it moved. But I paid to go see it in the theater. Okay, maybe I didn't pay. You might have paid.
Yeah. And yeah. Oh, that's right. So yeah, you failed that test too. That's right. Yeah, it's hard.
I will just say, though, in my defense, I believe we saw it after like Bear Bus weekend, or it was like one of those, like either like a Pride weekend, a Bear Bus weekend, something where I had been going for days straight with very little sleep. And then you put that movie on, even if it's in the theater. I fall asleep at movies in general, but goddamn, that was a slow burn.
It's I like them that way. I do prefer that. But I will also go slightly different energy with Tron Legacy, because as much as I am not in maybe like, I think I'm in the majority, but as much as not everybody loved what Tron Legacy did to the original Tron, I think it did a pretty good job. The Daft Punk soundtrack is still one of my favorite soundtracks to just put on to get some energy going. And overall, I think it, again, honored the past. It is a sequel, carried it forward, reinvented it for a new era. Finally, and this is just a quick, because I haven't seen it yet, the new Dune movie by also Villeneuve. All I've seen about it, everything I've read, I'm going to love it, which is probably bad because I think I have higher expectations than I should, but I will probably... probably, almost certainly say that is a successful reboot. So, you know, very few, a couple weeks to go until we get to see that for ourselves. But those are my favorite remakes.
Flash forward to future us talking about his disappointment in the film.
take a sound clip to play.
Right.
When he says how much he hates it.
I'll do that. And we'll go right back to that soundbite. Eric, let's throw it over to you. What do you consider a successful reboot? Or I'll say, like, we'll call it a refresh, because kind of Tron Legacy and Blade Runner 2049 were less reboots and more refreshes for the property. So we'll kind of expand that horizon.
I think a couple good ones that I've liked are... the Star Trek reboot, the J.J. Abrams, the first one, I mean, they certainly did not keep up the quality in subsequent movies, but the first one I thought was really good. Reboot, retelling.
You mean Star Trek Into Darkness wasn't as high on your list?
No. and then I did like the Mary Poppins sequel that they kept saying it's not a reboot. But it's quite the refreshing new. Everything is new about it. And just further emphasizes the fact that Mary Poppins is a Time Lord. Because she had a new face. And then, but probably one of my favorite reboots is Little Shop of Horrors. When it came back in 86 as a musical, as opposed to the original 1960s.
Oh, that's right.
I like
monster
it.
Monster movie.
Mm-hmm. I like it. Not someplace fancy like Levittown.
That? Okay, so, okay. I know it's October. It's spooky month. It's BJ's and my birthday month. And I know I'm going to catch hell for this, but I've never seen Little Shop. My knowledge of Little Shop comes from video clips played at like Musical Mondays or like, you know, bar types of things, and people singing the songs at karaoke. So every time or anytime somebody sings Somewhere That's Green and that line is said, mm-hmm. I lose it because I grew up not far from Levittown. And anytime just hearing those words, not someplace fancy like Levittown, I giggle because that is not a fancy place.
But well, I mean,
in the context of the film,
to Skid Row.
Yes.
yes. Compared to Skid Row, you should watch it. I think you would absolutely love it.
I probably would. I just have never like it. It's one of those things that it never comes up and it's never like at the front of my mind until it's talked about or sung. And I'm like, oh, I've never seen that before.
Well, and what's funny is they're talking about remaking they're talking about doing a remake of the movie musical. And the rumor mill is that Lady Gaga is going to play Audrey.
I could see that.
Which works. Yeah. I mean, honestly, just her without her outfits. Like, just seeing her, like, with her hair in a bun, like, going to the store, she looks just like the actress that played Audrey.
Ellen Green.
It was Ellen. Yeah, Ellen Green. She looks a lot like Ellen Green. And plus, she's got the singing chops, obviously.
And being a New York Italian, like, I could see her putting on that affectation and doing an homage voice to Ellen Green in that role. Yeah, I could see it.
Yeah, so we're probably get a reboot of a remake of a remake coming up here soon.
Well, hopefully they would keep the original musical ending where the plant takes over the world at the end.
Yes,
spoilers.
It's 35 years.
It's also on HBO Max, which you have access to. So,
oh, no. You know what we should do? We should do a Discord movie like watch along.
Oh, watch like a watch party with all.
Yeah,
there is actually a website that does that. And I can't remember the name, but actually, one of the TikTokers I follow, he does live reactions to like the What If series, and he'll post it up on there. So you can either watch. So it's either it's. It's not Twitch. I know they do that on Twitch, but it's not Twitch. It's just
I know Netflix
that makes
like,
it easier.
Netflix stuff. There actually is a way to like do a watch party with Netflix directly through the website.
Yeah,
but we'll have to look into that. I think that would be fun. We'll do an October Little Shop.
Oh,
watch
I can
along.
Totally do Little Shop of Horrors. I'll have to bust out my wigs.
Oh my god, that'd be fantastic. So if you're out there listening and you think that's a good idea, let us know in the comments, tweet us, email us, let us know, because we'll set that up. That would be kind of fun. All right, BJ, what is a reboot slash refresh that worked for you?
One, it's still working for me. It's even though it's had some ups and downs. Doctor Who. Doctor Who was rebooted in 2005, very successfully, in my opinion, and it is still going. I have had mixed feelings about the current showrunner, but apparently Russell T. Davis is hopping back in the chair, which I'm very excited about.
I was going to say he's about to refresh his own reboot. Coming full circle.
Yeah, we'll see. I'm interested because I don't think he got a budget, like the budget that they currently have.
I mean, did you see some of those monsters in series 9?
Oh my god.
That first episode with Rose and the trash can. Rose. Yeah, yes. Thank you. And that trash can eating Mickey is probably one of the worst VFX I've ever seen in television. It's so bad. I would almost rather them had not do any CG and all practical, which is still expensive, but you know what I mean? Like the old school Doctor Who where the walls are shaking in the set, than have that horrid, like, whatever that was. I like the episode, but that moment is watch it again and tell me it's not. But
it's horrible. But that's what made it so much fun.
it's and what's funny is that was kind of the charm of the series is you know it was always like bad costumes and whatnot, and I feel like they've worked really hard to kind of up the quality of their practical effects and their special effects to kind of get out of that corniness. So it'll be very interesting to see what Russell T. Davis does with like a bigger budget. I mean, hell, they've released episodes in theaters now, so it'll be very interesting. And then
and Davies will be at the helm for the 60th as well.
Yes.
Which I'm excited for.
Very excited for that.
Maybe. And I know it wasn't just the Davies thing with why he hasn't been back involved, but maybe if they got Russell T. Davies back, maybe Eccleston will make an appearance. And my little gay Doctor Who love and heart will finally be whole again by seeing Christopher Eccleston back on a Doctor Who presentation.
You can listen to him as the Doctor on those Big Finish audio dramas if you're so inclined. I don't know if you know he was doing that.
I didn't, and I have no commute anymore, and I don't listen to things usually like that at home, and that makes me a little sad. So I'll have to.
If only you had a trip coming up or something that you could listen to.
Exactly.
I sleep on planes. Come on. If I was driving, I originally was going to drive, I would have totally done it for a drive. But maybe I'll consider it for the plane ride for putting me to sleep.
But an honorable mention, it didn't end quite as well. But honorable mention goes to Chilling Adventures of Sabrina because it had a very solid start and it was really, really fun. Show, and then the last season kind of fell off, but usually around a fourth season shows either break or make. So but yeah, those are my honorable reboot mentions.
So I was just gonna go with one, but since you all did not mention this, I will, because we all pretty much have talked very highly about it. She-Ra and the Princesses of Power was a very well acclaimed and loved by the viewership reboot of the 80s cartoon. I'm going to say comic, the 80s cartoon. And it was done very well to bring it to a new audience with new sensibilities and showcasing a representation that hasn't been done very well in a lot of cartoons. There are some, like Steven Universe has done a great job as well, but the She-Ra and the Princesses of Power definitely was a great reboot. And I guess I will say it's a reboot because the animation style changed, the story was condensed down to just the mangas, but Sailor Moon, when they did the Crystal run all the way through the movies, I think it was a fantastic job doing a reboot and telling a more cohesive story. Obviously, for those who don't know and aren't maybe big Sailor Moon fans, when it originally was being run in the 90s, in the mid-90s, they were producing them as the mangas were being distributed. So they didn't, they were pulling a Game of Thrones before Game of Thrones did it. They were running these stories without the following chapters or a multitude of chapters afterwards to have the story in front of them. So they created stories to fill in the gaps and the time in between when they had source material to work with, and then they would get back to the story. So when you fast forward, you know, to what was that, 2010, 11, 12, somewhere in that ballpark, maybe a little bit later than that, maybe it was 2015, maybe it was 15. I don't know. I could look it up, but that would take me some time right now. But when they rebooted and brought this back in with the new animation style, they went to just the source material. They cut out all the extra episodes. They were able to tell a more cohesive and concise story. And I enjoyed it thoroughly. And I thought that it was a great way to reboot and retell the story for a newer audience and to let the existing audience who were fans from the original iteration really just have a nostalgia flashback without it, quote unquote, ruining my childhood. So those are my takes on that.
2016. That's what
2016. Ah, wow. Well, at least one good thing came out of that year. So there were a lot of good things that came out of most of that year up until, you know, Q4. The end of Q3, Q4. So that is our quick round of our quick-ish round of the reboots and refreshes that we think worked well. We want to thank you all for listening to our podcast and enjoying our show, checking out our social media, joining our Patreon page and helping to support the show. You can do all of that by going to our website, flameonshow.com. And scroll through. We've got our YouTube videos. The Rainbow Spotlight series is up there in a gallery. Link to the YouTube channel if you want to subscribe. Our Twitch links are there. Our social media links are all there. Our Threadless shop is linked right on our website. So you can rock your very own Flame On merch. And head on over to our Patreon page and become a patron at any one of the four levels that we have there. That is at patreon.com/flameonshow if you just want to go directly to that page. But we want to thank you all for your continued listenership and support. So check us out, flameonshow.com.
Don't book a room. Book a memory that starts with a stunning sunrise, watched by a smug you. Book a memory that starts with a flat white, or a cappuccino, or one of each. Book a memory that starts with a swipe of your phone. Choose a room, check yourself in using the Hilton Honors app. Then open your door with the ease of digital key. Hilton. To new memories.
Train tickets. Check. Time slot. Check. We're off to the exhibition of the century. A coffee in the cafe. A fancy salad in the rooftop restaurant. Before we explore one of the world's most iconic collections. The gift shop. Culture trips again. Ah, museums again. Nothing reconnects us to the people, places, and things we love like rail. Let's get back on track.
All right, let's break it down into the properties that need a reboot or a refresh or a retread or something to get the taste out of our mouths of the last time. Now, this can include reboots that have been rebooted that need to go away and never be thought about again. I'm looking at you, Fanfortastic. Fanfortastic. I don't even know how to say it with that four in the middle. Fanfortastic.
Yeah, Fanfortastic.
Fanfortastic. Okay, there we go. Looking at you, Fanfortastic. Cannot wait until you're rebooted in the MCU. Cannot wait. So let's go back around the other way. BJ, since this was your topic that you came up with, why don't you kick us off on what you think needs to be rebooted?
I racked my brain on this for a bit because, like I said, the Little Shop of Horrors is potentially getting like a remake, and then there's all sorts of stuff that's already been rebooted. Everything old is new again. So honestly, this hit me like a ton of bricks. and I don't know why it hasn't happened sooner. I would love a complete reboot of the Versus series of fighting games, starting with Children of the Atom, but change it to Children of Krakoa, and you have a giant X-Men 2D fighting game with a roster of, like, not just like the, because the original roster of Children of the Atom was straight up the 90s X-Men cartoon, which is great. It was a fun game. I played the shit out of it in the arcade, but I would love a more comic accurate X-Men fighting game starting with a remake with Children of the Atom. So, because one of the things that really made me super happy is when they made Marvel vs. Capcom 2 and they included Marrow, and she hadn't been featured in any of the animated properties or anything. And I hated how she played, but I played the shit out of her because I was like, oh my God, something from the comics is here. So I would definitely love, because you could easily add in, like, they didn't have Beast. They didn't have, like, Angel, the original Angel. You could have more comic accurate costumes, like for Scott. You could have their Hellfire Gala costumes. I would absolutely lose my shit if I could play as Storm in her Hellfire Gala outfit. I would love it. You could play as Prodigy. And although he doesn't have, like, actual offensive abilities, you could literally have him copy fighting styles of, like, every Marvel character. I would really love to see that happen. And then you could add it. There's like, they never had Carnage. They never had other Marvel characters that I'd really love to see. I'd love to see what was the other? There's another X-Men. I would love to see Shade as a playable,
Let me get this right. Character. You're saying let there be Carnage?
Yes.
Sorry, I had to.
But you could have Shriek. There's a whole bunch of more Spider-Man characters you could have in the fighting games that were never featured. You could have Dr. Octopus. There's just so many possibilities now because although the roster of Marvel characters hasn't really expanded a ton, there's still, like, you could have Jane Foster's Thor. I would love to see Jane Foster's Thor, Miles Morales, like, all of these characters in a fighting game.
Oh, my God. So, anytime, yeah. I can see Russell Dowderman's design for Jane Foster's Thor, the Mighty Thor, we'll call her, because that's what her title is, the Mighty Thor. Anytime I can see that, I am in love. And I will say this, at the Marvel exhibit that was here in Chicago, there is I think it's a watercolor painting by Esad Ribic. Is that it? Esad Ribic of the Mighty Thor. So Esad Ribic's talent painting and Russell Dowderman's design for the Mighty Thor. I was like, I want to rip this off the wall and run away with it and steal it because it is so nice.
I was reading some comics, and I just sat there remembering when I was younger, and I was like, man, it would have been cool if they had Beast in a fighting game. Oh man, it would have been cool if they had included, like, Spider-Gwen or something in a fighting game. You could even have each individual property as a fighting game, and then you have, like, a big Marvel universe versus itself before you do, like, a Marvel superheroes versus Capcom or anything like that. So you could have, like, an entire Spider-Man fighting game done in that versus style 2D animation with, like, just Spider-Man characters or just Doctor Strange characters. I would love to see Satana as a playable character, like, because I was also playing Smash Brothers, and I was like, man, how come other fighting games aren't adding to their roster to this ridiculous amount? And then I realized, oh, well, that would be great if Capcom had done something like this with Marvel vs. Capcom, where they just keep adding on to their roster. I think we're way overdue, because Marvel vs. Capcom Infinite was kind of lame, had no X-Men characters in it whatsoever. I hate that pseudo 3D 2D thing they did since Marvel vs. Capcom 3. I would like. So honestly, I would just like a reboot of Marvel vs. Capcom 2, just with, like, even more comic accurate characters.
Love it. And I will be honest, when you said Versus at first, I thought you were talking about that Apple TV like music show. And I was like, that's still a thing now. Like, how are we going to reboot it that quickly? I know things get turned back around really fast nowadays, but that's too fast. Got it. Fighting games. I love it. I'd be on board with that. I'd totally be down for playing some more fighting games with more X-Men characters, more comic accurate. And oh my God, get Madeline Pryor as the Goblin Queen in there.
Yeah. Oof.
Get Jean Grey's Phoenix versus Madeline Pryor's Goblin Queen. I'd be playing it all day, every day. Love it.
Oh my God, Mr. Sinister and his super is just a whole bunch of other Mr. Sinisters running onto the screen. Like,
and one of them stopping and being like, oh my God, that cape is fabulous. And then carrying on.
Every time they bum rush somebody with a cape, if they survive the super, that version of Mr. Sinister you're playing as ends up with a cape.
Oh my God. Fucking would die. All right, Eric, what is the property that you feel needs a reboot or a refresh?
So as I was going through some of my favorite like 80s TV shows to kind of see, it's about 30 years now, what's something that could come back? I was like, The Greatest American Hero. Because I feel like it would be, if they just turned it into like a pure sitcom versus any sort of dramedy-esque and just shorten it to like a half hour versus hour-long episodes, I feel like it could be a good offset to a lot of the more serious superhero shows out now. Especially since how a lot of the humor came from him trying to figure out the various powers of his suit. And I just feel like that would be a fun one to see redone. Although I'd be scared about what kind of remix they would do to the theme song.
No, I feel like if you do it as a sitcom, you should have the theme song be exactly the same, or even make it sound even more dated. Like, you just lean into it. Like, I feel like that would be perfect if they just leaned into it to make it as horny as fucking possible.
Now, I know we've played it before, and I know you've sung it before, but that's the "Believe It or Not, I'm Walking on Air," right?
Very okay. much okay. so, yes.
I wish I still had it on the soundboard, because I would play it right now. But I was like, I remember you using that as one of our Patreon micros, where we were talking TV theme songs.
Yes, very much so. And yeah, it's just the story of a substitute teacher who gets visited by aliens and given a suit along with an instruction manual, which he promptly loses and has to figure out the suit. And just his misadventures from then on.
That is fantastic. I love it. Yeah, I think I agree with BJ, where you would just need to make it super cheesy for the theme song, and like, I don't know, find who would be a good like group to do it. I'm trying to think if there's like a modern pop group that would be like cheesy and fun enough to do it.
Oh, what's his name for Panic at the Disco? He'd ham it up for sure.
Oh, Brandon Urie.
Yeah. Or probably Fall Out Boy, because Fall Out Boy did the lead singer of Fall Out Boy did the opening song to the Disney Junior series, Spider-Man and His Amazing Friends. They have like a little like Disney Junior show. He wrote that opening and performed it. So like, I'm pretty sure like, at least those two would definitely be on board to like ham it up and make it like as corny as possible.
Is that Pete Wentz?
Yes, Pete Wentz.
Okay, so Pete Wentz or Brandon Urie. I think I could see that. I could see it. You just got to follow up to me from Lover and just get Taylor Swift and Brandon Urie to do it as a duet.
Yes, yes.
be good to go. Oh my god, could you imagine? Okay, so if we were to spin off of that and like reboot the $6 Million Man and the Bionic Woman, and then like do cheesy 80s-esque theme songs for it, and then get Taylor Swift to do one and Brandon Urie to do the other, and like, but then have it be where it's like one song that connects, but use part like each part that describes the one in their respective television show. I like this. Why are we writing this down? Oh, because it's being recorded and we can just listen to it again. Got it. Okay. Trademark. If anybody writes that script and gets all that done, we want at least creative credit in the credits there.
We get exclusive rights to the show's podcast.
where we discuss every episode of the Bionic Woman and the $6 Million Man, starting from the very beginning. Oh god, then we'd have to go back and do the Lee Majors and oh god, who is the other one? Lee Majors was the $6 Million Man. Who is the Bionic Woman?
Oh shit, I can't remember.
Katie Sackhoff in the reboot.
Oh yeah.
Oh jeez.
Lindsay Wagner.
Lindsay yes. Wagner. Yes. Yes. Okay. All right. Yeah. There we go. Okay. Love it. All right. So we've gotten fighting games. We've gotten the greatest American hero. Brian, what is your property that should be rebooted?
Well, I had an idea, and I was going to do Logan's Run, which have you guys even seen? Eric, I think you may have seen Logan's Run.
I have seen it's Logan's Run.
Possible, yeah.
Okay, is that so when BJ's... Wolverine was running through the hallways in that one X-Men movie?
Oh, my God. He's running after Jean. No,
he runs past Jean in his Weapon X gear. Oh, that was Apocalypse. Apocalypse. I was like, which one was that? It wasn't Days of Future Past. It was Apocalypse. Because he wasn't in Dark Phoenix. He knew to stay away from that film with everything in him.
Right. So I was going to say that, and I do think that would be an amazing reboot. And if you're interested, there is a great article I read on IO9 that's like the history of the reboot of this property, and it never came to pass. And people are like, it's not going to happen. But the more I thought about it, as you guys are talking, like, you know, okay, like what would be redeeming for a property? I would really like, and this is relevant to something that's coming up, I would really like the X-Files to be rebooted, but not by Chris Carter, because he did reboot his series, the X-Files, with a continuation. And though there was a very memorable episode featuring a werewolf and Shangela, which I do like that episode a lot, overall, the series was not great. And in fact, in many people's minds, it left a bad, like the ending of the original series was like, fine, okay, yeah, whatever. This ending was probably worse. Like, people are just pissed. So as much as it was lovely to see Duchovny and Gillian Anderson back on there, I would like to see somebody I don't know, who's a good showrunner for that? I mean, okay, here's a really wild idea. So one of our favorite shows, of course, is Gravity Falls. By Ooh. The fabulous Alex Hirsch, who is very influenced by X-Files. Obviously, if you've watched Gravity Falls, you probably pick up a little bit of that. But I would give Alex Hirsch a reboot of X-Files, animated or not, I don't know. But and basically tell him, like, go wild. It's your canvas. You just go crazy. All of the conspiracy theories you want to work in there, albeit like maybe not QAnon and all this. Yeah. The conspiracy theories that are a problem. Ivermectin, whatever. I don't know. Whatever all your other nonsense is. But like, go crazy with the Bilderbergers, the Freemasons, Scientology. I don't know. Whatever your crazy, themes are. I think that'd be a lovely notion. And I say that not just because obviously it was the X-Files reboot was bad. I think there's a problem when you have a series creator come back and take what was very precious to them and try to reinvent it. I don't think it works very often. I am curious with Doctor Who specifically if Davies comes back and does something even better, because I do like his run, even though I tend to prefer Moffat's run, but I think in general, Davies will be an interesting, you know, I'm excited to see what he brings to it, especially after his awesomely queer television he's done since then. I'm going to guess we're going to get Captain Jack, even if that's sort of an issue that they got to figure out what's his name? Oh my God. Who plays Jack? My brain's not working today.
John Barrowman.
Thank you. I knew there was a B. It stuck on the Barrowman part. Other than his stuff, like, I feel like there's a way to bring that back. But hey,
I was going to say they brought him back recently, so I feel
he exposed himself to his castmates back during his shows, and even though he was not certainly not sexually like assaulting anyone, and it puts him into that gray area of, yeah, it was sexual harassment, like, clearly, but at the time they dealt with it, he stopped doing it, is it still an issue? Yeah, it's that whole thing. Anyway, doesn't matter. Okay. Point where I'm going is this: Babylon 5, which is a show that I love very dearly. It's one of my favorite sci-fi shows of all time, and I would have absolutely said yes, we need a reboot on this. The problem is Michael J. Straczynski, JMS, has basically taken this on as the original showrunner and writer of most of the episodes, and he is doing the reboot, which is a reboot and not a sequel. And I am worried that he will fall into the Chris Carter like trap where they're too close to it. Like, I'm hoping he's smart enough to bring in some really diverse, smart, young writers. And certainly anyone who's worked on like The Expanse or Foundation most recently, or any of these like sci-fi or Star Trek, like, Discovery. If he can get some of the writers from Discovery, like, poach them. I would love to see what they do with Babylon 5, but JMS rebooting it, I'm worried. I'm just worried it's not going to work. And so I feel like the cautionary tale is you can never go home again, right? When you have a showrunner and they want to get involved, make them a producer, give them that credit, let them have Lucas, same thing, although it's arguable whether Lucas's sequels would have been better than, you know, the ones we got, but whatever. Like, you gotta have that, but don't slave to it. You got to be aware of the past, but don't be precious about it, because I don't think we don't want retreads. We really don't. We want sparks that like light the fire of this story, and then people are going to be like all excited about the past and go back and watch it. That's what happened with Doctor Who. Davies didn't just retread Doctor Who. He rebooted it. It's this continuation of the story, but he did it in a way that first season, if you had never seen any Doctor Who before, didn't matter. You were good to go. No backstory needed. Very modern and relevant. Got a great young crew of writers. Just, it works. And I worry that when it's, and you know, Doctor Who, there's no chance they were going to get the person people who created it from the 63 involved. So that was not a worry, but you know, like, you just got to have that fresh blood. You got to keep moving forward. You can't keep looking back. So I think Babylon 5 I'm worried about, but if I had had one choice, it's probably X-Files right now.
Nice. Yeah. And I can be that person to attest to the reboot of Doctor Who and not having any knowledge of it beforehand. British friend of mine in massage therapy school handed me a couple of DVDs and said, here, watch this. And, you know, put on the that episode of Rose that we were mentioning before. And as they say, the rest is history. All right, before I do mine, another quick thank you to everybody that is out there listening and have supported us through all of the years of Flame On, a little over 10 years of this podcast in existence, and we couldn't do it without you. So again, thank you. Go check out our website, flameonshow.com, where you can check out all of our social media and our Threadless shop, so you can get your own Flame On swag, and our Patreon page at patreon.com/flameonshow, where you can help us keep this podcast a trucking along. All right, so my choice for a property that needs a reboot, there's two, and they kind of, I don't want to say stem off of each other, but share a common leading actor. One may be a little controversial just because the show creator, a lot has come to light about him and his actions on set, especially around his female stars, including, I think at the time, 15-year-old Michelle Trachtenberg. I was just watching a musical episode of one of his shows this morning before I left the house for a little bit. But I loved Dollhouse. And Eliza Dushku as the lead in the show, where these people who have done bad things, illegal things, basically trade in 5 years of their lives to this mysterious organization who wipes their minds clean and then programs them into whatever their shady multimillionaire clients want. And then they're supposed to be released at the end of that contract, which comes with its own set of issues and problems. It almost didn't survive the first five episodes because of network interference. The network wanted the pilot retooled completely. They wanted more standalone episodic adventures and less overarching plot, which Whedon is known for doing. And doing very well in these television formats. So he did, and the show suffered for it. After that fifth episode, they finally kind of relented and let him tell the story that he originally wanted to tell. They were going to cancel it at the end of the first season. And because of the retooling of the pilot, they were an episode short. So he wrote an epilogue called Epitaph One, which was supposed to, in a way, be a closing point, but still leaving things open for, you know, for your interpretation as a viewer. He was able to convince them because of Angel and the work that he did to get an extra season out of that. After season four, he promised he was able to cut the budget down significantly. And I keep wanting to say the WB. Was it WB? What network was were Buffy and Angel on at the end? They went from UPN to the WB, I believe.
Yeah,
right?
It was WB.
CW. What's See, the no, what's
it
the
it
around?
Was WB. It was WB.
Was it? Okay. No,
it was WB, and then it went to I think.
No, it was yeah, WB first.
They were off the air by the time WB or changed to CW.
To CW? Okay. Yeah. All right, so it went from UPN 9 to the WB. So Angel almost got the axe after season four. He promised to cut down the budget to like a quarter of what they were spending and was able to do that with Fox as well and use that success with Angel season five to get them to allow him to do a second season of Dollhouse, which in turn didn't 100% close out the story, but he ended up closing out season two with Epitaph Two, which gave more closure to the story overall. I would love to see, maybe not with Whedon at the helm, we don't need to get into all of that right now, but I think the concept and the cast, I would like to keep some of the cast. That's why I don't want to say a complete reboot, because I loved, I do not want to butcher their names, but I loved Sierra. I loved Victor. I loved Echo. I mean, I will say this one. Alan Tudyk was a gem and a charm for being a sociopath and a psychotic murderer. But he played it so well and so charmingly that like it was amazing. I would love to see that get a refresh and a new life, a second chance. I also would like to see True Calling, which was another Eliza Dushku vehicle that was not a Whedon project, but it came off of the heels of her being on Buffy. It was her chance to be the driver of a show, a drama with comedic elements. I don't even want to call it a dramedy, but it was, you know, it had its whole thing where she went to go work at a morgue to make some extra money while she was in school. Dead people would come back to life to ask her for help. The day would rewind, and it was a very Groundhog's Day or Groundhog Day murder mystery. Murder, She Wrote, and Groundhog Day had a baby, and that's what you get is True Calling. It did survive season one. Jason Priestley came on in season two as a foil to Eliza Dushku's True. And then it never really got resolved. The last episode or two never actually aired with the rest of the season. It was all because of, I think maybe the Olympics. There was some sort of television like thing that happened, and they weren't going to show it in its regular time slot. And then it went to like Saturdays at 3 a.m. to show like the last five episodes. And then they didn't even show the last one until like 3 months later on Comedy Central. It was some weird bullshit that it got. It did not get a proper closure, ending, send off. It didn't get any respect at the end. It was a major vehicle for Zach Galifianakis before The Hangover made him a household name. It was a very entertaining show, and it had a very interesting, to me, premise that I would love to see revisited and maybe refreshed with, again, I would like to see some of the same cast come back and maybe have a chance to really dive in a little bit more, or kind of get a soft reboot with some of the same characters, but let's kind of get a fresh crack at these stories. So I just want to see Eliza Dushku and her TV career actually get the credit that it deserves and should have always had, because she's amazing. So those are my choices for reboot / refreshes that should happen. Have any of y'all are Dollhouse or True Calling people? I know we've talked about it before. I think some Dollhouse, but no True Calling, right?
I mean, yeah. I remember, I think I watched the first episode of True Calling. But I definitely, remember Dollhouse. I watched some of, I think I watched all of Dollhouse.
I was going to say, yeah, that's available on Hulu. So if you haven't seen it, you can watch both seasons one and season two of Dollhouse on Hulu right now.
I watched Dollhouse with you, and then, I liked it. I really wish they had continued. They had such a good world that they were exploring and slowly building out. The comics that they did, I don't know if you, I think you read, may have read those. They were kind of a nice way to finish up those a little bit. Playing off of the Epitaph episodes, but yeah, True Calling, I just didn't, unfortunately it wasn't genre enough and it didn't have Joss Whedon. So I was kind of like, But yeah, you definitely liked it. So what has she done lately? I know she stopped acting for a bit to go back to school. Has she been anything lately?
I want to say yes. She was on a show, because I know that when the Me Too movement really sprung forward, she was on a show that kind of came up because she had called out one of the people that she was working with. And she was on, we saw her at New York Comic Con a couple of years back. She was promoting a show at the time. I'm trying to look at it right now. She was on Bull.
Yeah. She, let's see. She was in Big Bang Theory. Some animated motion comic for Torchwood. I don't remember that at all. Wow. The Scribbler with Michelle Trachtenberg and Gina Gershon. That sounds, good. Some other stuff. She was a voice on Hulk and Agents of Smash.
Oh, she was She-Hulk, I believe.
Yeah.
The length of the run there.
And oh, wow. There's a Cinemax TV series I vaguely recall called Banshee. I guess she had a recurring role on that as well. So yeah, I guess,
I think that might have been what she was promoting when we were at MegaCon.
She's doing some stuff, but she's I know she had other things in her life going on, so that was definitely a priority for her. But yeah, and the last credit for TV is The Saint, which is a TV film. So
2017, she had a recurring guest role in the last three episodes of the first season of Bull, the CBS drama series Bull. That looks like it was the last thing that she did. That, I think, was the actor that she was working with that she called out. That was a big thing during the Time's Up and Me Too movement. I love her to death. I met her. I sat 2.5 hours of traffic. I always tell that story. She's when Gmail did these shelfies and you could have a picture behind in your Gmail. It's my picture of me and her. It's, you know, I love her. I wish that she had a little bit more of that success, but she's been doing well in recent years in her personal life, and I'm happy to see it. All right, dear listeners, let us know what you think should be rebooted. Email us, chat us up on social media, go in the comments, and just let us know. We would love to hear from you. And with that being said, we'll be back in 2 weeks with our next pop culture roundup. And we'll see you then. Bye, bitch.
Hi, this is Katie,
Taylor,
and Hannah from the hit comedy true crime podcast Drunk Women Solving Crime.
We're currently being sponsored by Channel 4's Murder Island, which couldn't be more appropriate.
This show sounds amazing. Four teams of ordinary people compete to solve a fictional case on a remote Scottish island and the chance to win £50,000.
So join Drunk Women Solving Crime and watch Murder Island every Tuesday from October 5th on Channel 4.
Or stream it on all four.
Drinking while you watch is optional.